Blog Talk Radio.
Learn how to take your caring and giving farther with the Caring and Funding Podcast powered by CAP America. CAP America, America's leader in cross-border philanthropy, helps corporations, foundations, wealth advisors, and individuals who wish to give internationally and with enhanced due diligence in the United States. Through its industry-leading grant management program and philanthropic advisory services, CAP America helps donors amplify their impact and ensure their gifts are made in a safe and effective manner. This Caring and Funding Podcast is dedicated to these donors and the charities they support. Our guests are leaders in their field who join us to share tips for success and stories that inspire. Our host is Ted Hart, the CEO of CAP America. After the show, you can find all our podcasts at capamerica.org, on iTunes, and now just say, Alexa, play CAF America on TuneIn. Now, welcome the host of CAP America's Caring and Funding Podcast, Ted Hart.
Thank you for joining us today for the special Giving Tuesday edition of the Caring and Funding Podcast. Giving Tuesday is an impressive global movement that unleashes the power of people and organizations to transform their communities and the world. Created in 2012, today is the day that we encourage all people to do good. Make someone smile. Help a neighbor. Give to your favorite charity. Every act of generosity counts, and everyone has something to give. I don't have to tell you, our listeners, that this has truly been a year for history books. As we gather today to celebrate the good in the world and those who do good for the world, we are reminded that it has now been nearly 11 months since the world recorded the first instance of COVID-19 virus in Wuhan, China. It has now been 8 months since the World Health Organization declared this new virus a global pandemic. And it has now been a little over a month since CAF America released Volume 5 of our COVID-19 report series, The Face of Charities During COVID-19 Worldwide. Sharing the stories of thousands of charities responding to our survey series. The data has brought the global picture into focus. Nonprofits around the world have struggled to meet increased demands for their services, while their funding has been decreased, costs have skyrocketed, and now many fear they won't survive. Yet through the fog, through the haze, through the late nights and long hours, stress and concern, strategies have emerged. Charities around the world are showing resilience. They are showing determination. They are showing creativity, and donors are stepping forward as never before. 2020 is blessedly nearing its end, but sadly it does not appear that we are safe from the ravages of this pandemic. More than 51 million people worldwide are confirmed to be infected, and over 1.25 million men, women, and children have died. Many countries around the world are facing a second regional or nationwide lockdown. Here in the United States, about 30 million people remain unemployed. For many, their benefits have run out, and their financial position is becoming more precarious by the day. Businesses are closing at an alarming rate. COVID-19 continues to challenge humanity, and in every town, in every country around the world, there are volunteers and nonprofits struggling to meet the needs of their community. This day, Giving Tuesday, has never been more needed. This year, the need for your generosity and giving has never seemed more acute. And so today, we have invited leaders from around the world to tell their story of COVID resilience and to reflect on the need for Giving Tuesday 2020. And first up, it's my pleasure to welcome Gabrielle Kirstein, the Chief Executive Officer of Feeding Hong Kong. Feeding Hong Kong is a registered charity with a mission to fight hunger in Hong Kong and reduce the amount of quality food sent to landfills. Feeding Hong Kong achieves this by collecting high-quality food that would otherwise be thrown away and redistributed to frontline charities feeding people in need. Gabrielle started her career at the international advertising agency Bates and their integrated communication consultancy 141 London. She moved to Hong Kong in 2003, and in 2011 she founded Feeding Hong Kong. Gabrielle, thank you for joining us here today on the Caring and Funding Podcast. Gabrielle, Feeding Hong Kong has had an incredible journey during this COVID-19 global pandemic, and it has really, in our eyes, been a story of resilience. Can you share with our listeners your story?
I can, of course. And firstly, thank you, Ted, for inviting me. It's a real pleasure to be here and have this chance to share, as you described, what's been a journey over this year. So in Hong Kong, we faced the first wave of COVID way back at the beginning of the year. It was late January. We were just coming to the end of Chinese New Year. And quite frankly, within the space of 2 weeks, it felt like everything had changed. And, you know, we were facing a series of disruptions across all of our organization, but I can really summarize it by, you know, giving you an insight into the disruptions that we were facing with our food supply, the disruptions that we were facing with our logistics, and then the disruption that we were facing with our distribution. And, you know, it was all about how, taking a step back and going, how do we ultimately keep our doors open and how do we keep food flowing from where it's surplus to where it's needed and where it's needed more than ever before? And I'd love to just share a few examples of those disruptions. You know, if we look at the food, what really happened overnight was that programs that previously had been regular, had been reliable, just changed. So our retail program, where we're picking up from bakeries, where we're picking up from supermarkets, quite literally overnight stopped. And if you cast your mind back to the early days of when we had a lot of panic buying, and so the steady source of food suddenly disappeared. And then another program that was massively impacted was our airport program. This wasn't quite as dramatic. You know, unlike the retail, it wasn't overnight. But what we saw was that in February, donations from that program fell by about 14%. By March, they were down by 35%. By April, just in tandem with reduction in global flights, donations from that program were down by 90%. And in that case, we don't anticipate the recovery of that program, you know, within not just this year, but we're looking at 2021. But at the same time, although we were facing new struggles, there was also an opportunity that arose in terms of food donations, and that was with wholesale programs. So we had warehouses, we had distributors that were calling us up with pallets and pallets of food to donate, which helped us offset volumes, but was creating another challenge because it was a completely different set of logistics that were required, which then kind of brings me along to the logistics and the disruptions we were seeing there. Because of that shift in food supply, our warehouse was struggling. Our manpower wasn't set up to accommodate this change in food. Our fleet wasn't set up for this change in food supply. We were getting stock that was bottlenecked in the warehouse. But I think one of the biggest challenges we faced, particularly right there at the beginning, was our volunteer support. So traditionally, we have, you know, had these wonderful partnerships with corporate groups that come down and volunteer in our warehouse. You know, typically every single day, we will have a group that comes down. And again, overnight, as social distancing kicked in, as work from home policies implemented, our corporate volunteering stopped. And so our manpower dramatically reduced. And then the final challenge, I mean, there were many more, but just, you know, going on that flow, our charity distribution. So in normal times, pre-COVID, we were serving over 140 charities across the city. We had a steady flow of food in and out. But in those first 2 weeks, 75% of our charity partners closed, which meant we had food, we knew the need was still there in the community, but we were struggling to get it out to the people that needed it. And even as the situation evolved, we faced a third wave here in Hong Kong in July, August. That situation happened again. So at that point, we had 50% of our charities that closed. So those were, you know, some of the of the challenges we faced, what did we do? And I think just to sum it up, it was about pivoting and it was about partnerships. So if we look at food, what did we do? We basically took a step back and we shifted our focus from our airport and retail programs to wholesale, because wholesale had doubled. So it was really about that reallocation of resources. And then we did another thing. We found that with the wholesale program, we were getting large donations of single products, but we were losing variety. So we reached out to our supporters. We ran campaigns to promote food drives, to get individual donations of key staples. And then we launched a purchase program, which was something we really hadn't done in the past, but we really recognized the need in the community. The need was for more food. The need was of a consistent supply, constant supply of food. So we launched an emergency food box program to really supplement that surplus food. And then how did we keep that food moving? This is firstly where partnerships came in. We reached out to other logistics companies, to warehouses, to transportation companies, to see if they could help us overcome those bottlenecks. And I think just that was one of the I think those moments where very early on we just recognized the generosity of the community to step up in times of need. And then with volunteers, we didn't have the corporate groups anymore. So what we did is we shifted our recruitment towards individuals. And we now have a situation where if we open up a volunteer shift, it is full within 24 hours. And it is these passionate, committed individuals that are coming down and helping us every single day keep that food moving. And then with the charities, I mean, that was really about clear communication, was in the early days finding out who was still open, which were those charities that still were receiving food, were still distributing food, what did they need and how could we help them? And then as the situation evolved, it was how could we evolve our service? So before we were delivering typically pallets of food to these charities, which was this food box program, where we could put together a tailored family box, a tailored senior box, which required minimum handling than with our receiving charities. And they could focus just on the safe distribution, the door-to-door distribution to households of families that needed that support. So to sum up, you know, what have we learned? I think it's that being prepared to pivot, to be agile. And I think what I'll stress is over the 10 months now that we've been doing it, we've had to pivot multiple times. So being agile, being ready to change and adapt, the importance of scenario planning. We'd learned a lot last year. In Hong Kong, we faced a lot of challenges due to the social situation here. We started scenario planning then for logistics disruption. And it was really in February taking that to the next level. You know, what were the worst case scenarios, which I think we never thought would come to play when we sat down in February and said, what would happen if there were no more flights? And then when several months later, we were down by 95%, the fact that we had gone through that worst case scenario really helped us. And then just leveraging our core competences. So at the end of the day, what do we do at Feeding Hong Kong? We're a connection between the community and frontline charities that are directly helping people in need. We are quite unique in our warehouse setup, in our transportation abilities, in our knowledge of food sourcing and supply. And so even though the surplus was changing, we've incorporated this purchasing, it was really kind of going, how do we use the strengths that we have to keep supporting the community at a time when, you know, what we do when food assistance has never been more vital.
Gabrielle, this is truly an amazing story of resilience and agility. Moving on to our next guest, I want to welcome Alana Wallace. Alana Wallace is the Programs and Communications Manager at Planetera in Toronto. Alana is the leading community tourism organization working to reduce poverty and is passionate about finding new ways to engage travelers and making positive, lasting impact on communities across the world. And today it's my pleasure to welcome here Alana Wallace. Alana, the story of Planetara, as we just heard from Gabrielle, your story is truly a story of adaptation. Can you help us learn from your experience?
Yeah, you're right, Ted. Thanks for having me join the podcast. And thanks, you know, to Gabrielle for her wonderful explanation about how her organization really pivoted and adapted. And certainly, you know, you're right. Planetara is directly tied to the travel industry. And when the pandemic, you know, started and in March and travel really ground to a halt, we had no idea how long we'd be in that type of situation. All around the world, in more than 50 countries, our partners, all community tourism enterprises who host international travelers for the most part for things like community tours, cultural experiences, meals, overnight stays at community-owned guest houses, handicraft demonstrations, you know, all kind of the like, suddenly had zero income as international tourism dried up pretty much overnight. Countries closed their borders, airlines, you know, stopped their flights. We knew we had to do something to help our partners through. You know, most of the majority of their income came from these international travelers, and truly the majority of Planetara's, you know, fundraising came from travelers on the ground experiencing our network of projects and being compelled to give to Planetara to support these kinds of initiatives around the world. And immediately we realized that although emergency relief is not Planetara's mandate, you know, we provide funding to community tourism enterprises to help them strengthen their business, access local training and resources so that they can increase their income or increase their access to international tourism and keep tourism dollars in the hands of local people. Emergency relief is not part of that mandate, but we knew because of the pandemic, we had to do something to support our communities that we work with. So we pivoted, that's the buzzword of 2020, I think. And we launched the Turn Travel into Impact from Home campaign, which was an online fundraising campaign to support our 85 community partners at the time, back in March. That you know, those partnerships are always growing. But for this campaign, we sent out a needs assessment survey and managed to touch base with all 85 partners within a few days of really the global sort of halt of travel. And mostly, you know, we were able to, through a needs assessment, identify what they kind of needed in the short term and long term in terms of support. Mostly in the beginning when we collected funds and donations through the Turn Travel into Impact from Home campaign from our wonderful global network of travelers who were now stuck at home but still felt a connection to the communities they visited on their travels. Those initial grants that we gave out were for things like medicine that maybe a community tourism organization, you know, supported at, you know, at risk or needy people in their community with things like medicine or food in the form of food parcels that were bought locally and distributed locally by our partners. Interestingly enough, we discovered that an incredible ripple effect of these small grants we were giving for emergency relief, because those funds were being used locally to buy food parcels from local markets or farmers, it actually had ripple effects in the local economy, which were really kind of a benefit that we didn't really see coming in the quick pivot that we did. But as partners, we're also able to maybe pivot and make plans to earn an income locally, whether that was through subsistence farming or selling a different product or service to the local domestic market. It's meant more recently, the funds that we've gathered from that campaign have gone towards more long-term sustainability and resiliency kind of projects like food gardens. And to date, we've provided 30 communities in 24 countries with emergency funds, and we're still working on growing our network, and at the moment we're really helping our latest grants, the latest being one for our community homestay partners in Nepal, have gone towards reopening protocols and safety protocols, things like cleaner, sanitizer, and assisting them in safely reopening for domestic travel at the moment, but international travel soon thereafter, we hope. And support from our partners came in different forms, not just monetary like these grants. This included the launch of the Planetara Learning Hub, which was a 2020 goal sort of for end of year, which we were expected to complete by end of year, but we fast-tracked this project and launched it in June. And it's an online website for our partners who asked in the needs assessment survey for more access to training and resources to strengthen their businesses. So this online hub, which is accessible for them in both Spanish and English, the two main languages that Planetara works in, it has all sorts of videos, instructional training, online workshops, 50 worksheets and templates for them to fill out to strengthen their business. And we've been running actually online webinars and workshops online to help them build their resilience and the mentorship that they receive from our staff. But outside of this emergency relief, as the months grew on, we planned a community building event for our supporters around the world who are stuck at home, leaning into that virtual world once again, like we did with the Planetara Learning Hub, and giving a little nod to traveling while most of us are stuck at home. We launched the Planetara Trek Challenge, which was an invitation to the travel industry, individuals who missed travel, our existing network of supporters to join a virtual trek to Everest Base Camp with a step count and a week-long kind of event online, all virtual, all connecting everyone via social media, and really putting communities at the heart of building back better was sort of the message that we were sending to the over 500 participants that raised over $80,000 for our work, being able to support communities as they build back, and really being able to pivot. We have a very small team at Planetara. You know, we are a nonprofit here in Canada. We're also a registered charity in the U.S., but we have a very small team. But that made us very nimble, and we were really able to move because we're so virtual and so global already, leaning into the digital space, leaning into a virtual space for fundraising, and also, you know, to support our partners through this kind of difficult time, really helped set us up for success. Our team was willing to take some risks and really be innovative and go virtual with our programs and with our fundraising. And it really helped us make the most of this, you know, challenging time that all charities are finding ourselves in.
Alana, thank you so much for sharing your story. Truly one of adaptation, but we're learning it's important to be nimble and innovative. I want to welcome here to the Caring and Funding podcast, Angela Frigo, who is the Secretary General of the European Food Banks Federation. Angela has been working in the EU field dealing with food, agriculture, and social affairs since 2010. Angela currently serves as the Secretary General, as I mentioned, for the European Food Banks Federation, which is a European nonprofit organization that works in collaboration with 24 members and 5 associate members in European countries. Her native language is Italian. She's fluent in English, Spanish, and French, and most importantly, she's here with us today. Angela Frigo, the story that of what the European Food Banks have done and have had to do is really a story of growth through adversity, and hunger really has a new face during COVID. Walk us through your experience and the lessons that we can learn.
Yes, thank you very much, Ted. And I'm really grateful for the possibility to participate in this podcast on the occasion of Giving Tuesday, and to share our story, the story of our organization and of our members. So I'll start saying that when the COVID-19 started to hit Europe, we made a choice because this challenging situation that we were experiencing in February and March, but that we are still experiencing today with a second wave in Europe, could be seen from our point of view as a threat leading to despair, or as an opportunity that could take us back to the roots of solidarity in Europe, and also to the roots of our mission, of our daily activity in Europe. So this situation, we believe that this situation is putting the person with all his or her needs and also weaknesses back at the center of our community. And we can shift the focus also of our activity back to what it is really essential. So we decided to make this choice and to consider the COVID as an opportunity. And if I may quote Pope Francis and the words that he addressed to our organization last year, Pope Francis said that your work, so the work of the food banks, is like that of trees, which breathe in pollution and give back oxygen. And like trees, you do not keep the oxygen, but you distribute the quantity required for living so that it can reach those in need. So I think that, the food banks are like the trees, and I think that this is a beautiful image. And, the activity of the food banks is made possible by tens of thousands of people every day. And in Europe, we have more than 27,000 of volunteers. And they are growing, the food banks, through adversity, as you said, because they are giving back to the community more than what they are receiving. And I think that this is a real example of circular economy with a social purpose and with a broader result, a broader goal than the starting point. As also Gabrielle said at the beginning, in Hong Kong, also in Europe, we faced a similar situation. So the food banks are operating in a new and increasingly complex environment. We are experiencing an increased food demand up to 30% at European level, with a range going from 6% to 90%. So it's really a huge increase in some countries. And this is a new poverty. So it didn't exist at the beginning of the year. And we are speaking of people who have lost their job due to the COVID, or families who were relying on schools for the meals of their children, and also elderly people living alone and also feeling more lonely due to the social distancing. Food banks are also experiencing a new daily routine. They have increased the amount of food redistributed, and they have also suffered a fluctuation of the supply. They have established new partnerships, so recovering a lot of food, of surplus food from the food service sector, but also from restaurants. And we faced, as you can imagine, a shortage of volunteers because most of our volunteers are over 65, so they were and they are still a group at risk. And we also faced a drop in financial resources due to unexpected expenses like for protective equipment. But at the same time, our members have expressed their full creativity and professionalism. So recovering food from restaurants, from airline companies, from cruise ships, and also reorganizing their activity. So like, for example, preparing food parcels for the charities. And as European Food Banks Federation, and the organization is based in Brussels, and I just want to highlight that we are a small team. We are a team of five people, five women. We decided to fully support our members since the beginning and also to call for solidarity. And we were, and we still are, overwhelmed by the outcome. So we decided to keep on going with all the activities that were planned at the beginning of the year, but we decided to organize all the activities, obviously, in virtual mode. So we organized weekly meetings with our members to share information and to know what was happening in the different countries. And in this way, we had the possibility to avoid any kind of disruption of relationship with our members. And we also reinforced the dialogue with them, but also with our partners and stakeholders. And we, in this way, I would say that virtual meetings, and at the beginning we were a little bit afraid because, digital tools were, our members, especially our members, were not so familiar with digital tools. But at the end, I would say that these virtual meetings have reduced the gap created by social distancing. So they have been really valuable. And at the same time, we also decided to launch a call for solidarity open to public authorities, businesses, and also citizens. And we established this social emergency fund to ensure and to secure the activity of our members. And again, we were overwhelmed by the response. We raised more than 4.3 million euros that were then redistributed to our members to respond to their needs. So like purchasing vans or paying additional warehouses. So for very concrete expenses. So I'll say that just to conclude that really the pandemic is an adversity for all of us, but especially for our organization and for our members, it has shed the light on positive initiatives such as the food banks, but not only the food banks. And it has proven that we can improve our communities even during these very challenging times.
Thank you very much. That's an incredible story. Again, growth through adversity. We're going to take a very quick break here, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by Carla Nobrega, the Director of Development at Habitat for Humanity Brazil, and we'll be right back.
Remember, our podcasts and archives are always available 24 hours a day at capamerica.org. on iTunes, or just say, Alexa, play CAF America on TuneIn. Now, back to the Caring and Funding Podcast and our host, Ted Hart.
And we're back here on Giving Tuesday with Carla Nobrega, the Director of Development at Habitat for Humanity Brazil, who has 26 years of experience working in resource development at nonprofit organizations. She has been with Habitat for Humanity since 2007. She's a founding partner and former vice president of the Brazilian Fundraising Association. Carla has received the 2019 ABCR America Fundraising Award in recognition for her volunteer service dedicated to promoting and strengthening professional fundraising in Brazil for the last 20 years. And I've really been looking forward to getting a chance to chat with you, Carla, because Habitat for Humanity Brazil has really shown the strategy of redirecting your expertise in brand new ways. So help us learn from the experience of Habitat for Humanity Brazil.
Hi, Ted. It's been a pleasure to be here to share our experience with our colleagues. I'm speaking from São Paulo, Brazil, and when that is the second country with the highest number of deaths of COVID right now. This is not a good record. It's a very bad. The pandemic arrived here in our country very strongly, especially because with the lockdown, many people here in Brazil live in very bad situation and could not stay at home, or they don't have water in their every day in their homes to do the hygiene and the protection, and also they couldn't go out to work. So it was the pandemic had also a very strong effect on their income. So I'm talking about the poor people that we serve through our housing programs in Habitat for Humanity, Brazil. So at that beginning, we thought in March when the pandemic arrived in Brazil, we started to work in home office and we had to suspend our field operations. However, we realized that there was an urgent need for sanitation and food relief. And so, and we could not cross our arms and do nothing, you know. So we decided to raise funds for a big emergency food and hygiene kit distribution. We did crowdfunding and we raised funds from corporate, and we were able to to distribute 6,000 emergency kits to all over the country. And it's been a very successful campaign. And we call this the first phase of our COVID attention activities. And then we realized that the lack of access to water in the communities was also a big issue for them to protect themselves from the virus. So we started our second phase of attention, of COVID attention. That was we developed a program to install hand washing stations in the communities, so people were close to bus stations and close to the entrances of the favelas, so people could wash their hands with water and soap and protect themselves for the virus. And we launched a second crowdfunding campaign. We raised funds from corporate for the second phase as well, and we were very successful because our initial goal was to build 300 community hand washing stations, and we have already installed 420 hand washing stations so far in 12 states and 112 communities in the country. Also, for the third phase of our attention to the COVID, that started now in September, when we were able to, our architects were able to go to the communities and do the technical assistance for the home repairs, which changed the shift of our home repairs that were focused in main home improvement before, and now we are doing WASH programs, and we are that are connecting to the protection, and there are faster home repairs, and we are fixing bathrooms and also installing water tanks in the community, in the homes, so people can have water every day in their homes. And I think that when I see now what we've done, that was very important for us to be successful in this very tough challenges that we faced this year. I think we were very quick in our response and very quick in thinking about other ways of doing our work, social work, that would be very helpful for the communities to overcome all the difficulties that we are facing this year. So we are glad now that we are serving much more people than we used before the pandemic. And for just, I'll give you a number, each hand washing station can serve 300 to 1,000 people per day washing their hands. So that's it. I think that we showed our team and volunteers, we showed creativity to think about new ways to serve people and do our mission here in Brazil.
Well, you certainly did bring a lot of creativity, and again, redirecting your incredible expertise to the needs of your community during a very difficult time. So thank you very much for sharing that with us, Carla. And now joining us is Carlos Laniacs. He's a president and CEO of Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Essex, Hudson, and Union Counties. And welcome here. Carlos is the immediate past chair of Big Brothers, Big Sisters of New Jersey. He took over the organization when it really needed a boost of energy, and has grown that organization tremendously during his time, and has received numerous awards from local and national entities for his work, including a formal recognition by President Obama. So thank you for joining us here, Carlos. I think it goes without saying that, you know, much of the New York, New Jersey area has been hit very hard early on in the pandemic and is now in another wave of COVID. And the service that you've provided in the eye of the storm has really inspired many of us. And I'm hoping that you can share your experience, but also help our listeners learn from that experience.
Well, thank you so much, Ted. And it's an honor to be alongside so many great leaders around the world doing essential work in this critical period of time. And I'm also grateful, Ted, for the platform you are affording us to manifest good energy into the world. We can't take this for granted. As we entered January and February, we had a trip to China, as it turns out. We are the only Big Brothers Big Sisters agency that has an international component, and it's a capstone to our program for our high schoolers. We have an exchange with a university there. And as it became increasingly clear, we had to pivot that trip, and not knowing that it would be part of the story of the year, we thought it was just an isolated moment. In February, when I described this to our children and to the families, I will be honest, I was confronted with tears, expressed disappointment. And so the eye of the storm hit us twofold, early on for that trip. But then as it continued to ripple into our operations in February and March, when we fully went to remote work. And the reason why I say that, is because regularly in my work with young people who have, that are born into demographics, that are stacked against them, and we're trying to offer them love and support and a critical, caring adult, a mentor in their life to help them blossom their own voice into this world. Whenever we find these moments of challenge, I often encourage our young people to offer perspective that this too shall pass. And then secondly, that they are not alone. But frankly, as an organization in March, I felt myself trying to heed those same points as an organizational leader. The markets were down. My lead funders had businesses where they were projecting 75, 80, 90% loss of revenues. Layoffs were pending for the philanthropic world for people that were supporting my organization. I'm a small social sector organization that is disproportionately reliant on philanthropy. So these were cautions for our organization and operations. And as we confronted that and the world was unclear in March, I heeded those points and we were not going it alone. And we talked to key friends. I talked to key funders and key organizations expressing that we will do our part organizationally to pivot, to reduce costs, that we wanted to value, express certain kind of values. We hire from the community. 80% of our staff are from our community, diverse leaders from our community. As well, programmatically, we didn't want to close up shop. We didn't want to have the pandemic have us be a casualty as an organization. And so we languaged that to our key funders and friends, even as they were facing financial uncertainty, and they bought in. You know, you are not alone is what we were telling our kids. And as we started to communicate to our key funders and friends, they made us as an organization feel like we weren't alone. But of course, we had to trim our costs. We reduced our operating costs by 13% immediately on non-staff related expense drivers. And we pivoted to work from home, which initially was just temporary, has been now the case consistently. We haven't gone back to the office. And as we evolved our program, we have successfully had our bigs and littles consistently lean on each other. We have seen the need of our littles be expressed to their caring adult mentors. In ways that we never would have predicted. They're telling our mentors the subtle things that are going on in their lives when, you know, the inability to socialize and have other watchful eyes, their social workers, the therapists, the guidance counselors in schools, would normally be those additional eyes on our children's development. And since those, those typical supports for our young people's development are no longer as present, the primacy of their big brother or big sister has increased. And as policy leaders and philanthropists were grappling with what to do, and we were seeing this in the New York, New Jersey region a fair amount, we saw a lot of the focus on internet connection and the need for technology. And that was absolutely right, but it wasn't sufficient. We became an additional voice to ensure that, key decision makers understood that while internet connection was important, the human connection was equally important. And we saw that emerge in our programs whenever we offered online opportunities for virtual sessions, virtual workshops, and then also the one-to-one interactions between our bigs and our littles. Our young people needed that outlet. They needed that caring adult to just express themselves. But in those moments too, we saw them express things that were not obvious to others as well. Depressive articulation, unfortunately, was manifesting itself. And whenever we had that big who was keenly aware to what the littles are going through, the subtle things that are being expressed, we then were able to support the additional wraparound services that our young people needed that, frankly, maybe a parent or guardian may have seen, but disproportionately a lot of our families were labeled essential workers. And so they were trying to make ends meet on their own. And our young people just didn't have the level of eyes on them like they normally would have. And so it became an all hands on deck, and the central entity, the central person in that became the mentor. And so we pivoted a lot of our programs to online, but then also just challenged our young people to communicate in ways not only verbal to our bigs and also to our staff, but also to start journaling as a habit, create a habit of regular check-ins with themselves, writing journal prompts on a regular basis, on a daily basis. But then we've pivoted this into the power of stories and our narratives from our communities. I mean, the pandemic is one wave of the storm, but concurrent waves have been on social justice and racial injustice and inequities. Frankly, our young people have been confronting all their lives. And so we've been channeling that energy around the need for storytelling, having our children feel that they have a voice, capturing that voice and sharing that with us and their bigs. And that to us has been a real blessing, to hear the power of their narratives emerge through this regular journaling practice, which frankly we had not focused in on in the past, but given the world and the world that we live in today, it allowed us to get back to basics and just putting pen to paper and letting our young people express their voice. And in these moments, we've challenged our kids, who's gonna be the next Maya Angelou? Who is gonna be the next James Baldwin? In our midst, we have powerful stories of our young people shining and elevating their voice in some very dark times. And so the power of mentorship and having someone in their corner encourage that and love that and care for that has allowed us to see a lot of positivity emerge, even in the face of some of this darkness.
So let's go around in the same order you had before. And please provide your reflections on Giving Tuesday 2020. How should Giving Tuesday 2020 become successful? Why is this important, especially this year? So let's go back to Gabrielle, please.
Sure. So
2020 is without a doubt going to be remembered as a year of unprecedented challenge, a year in which so many people have suffered, so many people have struggled. But I think today is going to reflect what I have seen every day since COVID hit. And that is that this is a year of generosity, a year which is really bringing out the very best in so many people. Now, whether that's the gift of food, the gift of time, or a financial donation. You know, quite honestly, I've had moments when I thought, will we make it through this year? You know, will I be able to keep the doors open and food flowing to where it's needed? Will I be able to keep and pay all of my staff? But due to the amazing generosity of the community, you know, not only at Feeding Hong Kong have we been able to keep our doors open, but we've been able to increase the food that has flowed through to those that need it by 25%. Not only have we kept all of our staff, but we've actually been able to hire more people to keep food flowing. You know, creating jobs at a time when unemployment is at its highest in Hong Kong in years. And that's because people have been so generous. They've signed up for monthly pledges. They've donated their government handout. They've used their time in quarantine to run marathons and climb up Everest, virtually, of course. And in the process, raised thousands of dollars. And so to go back to the question, I am so hopeful that this Giving Tuesday is going to be a standout, that today is going to be a day when people give and people give generously. And I'm so grateful to CAFA for creating a platform to support that generosity.
Gabrielle, thank you. This is Ted Hart. I'm back, and thank you to my colleague, Kinga Ila, for pinch hitting for me as something went wrong with my microphone here. But if we could, again, we're in our lightning round here, so if we could ask Lana Wallace your quick thoughts on Giving Tuesday and its importance this year. Alana.
Yes, thank you, Ted. I really love how Gabrielle is saying that 2020 is the year of generosity. I think that was so eloquently put. And, you know, we've seen Planetara's community and people around the world are showing that they care about others, you know, other families, communities around the world, while they're stuck at home without the ability to travel. Maybe it's even time people tend to really reflect and often realize that, you know, how we're kind of going through this common struggle, different in different ways, but in our own unique ways, but still facing a global pandemic with those around us. And at Planetara, we've seen through our emergency campaign, Gabrielle mentioned our virtual trek to Everest and people coming together while they're in lockdown or, you know, dealing with COVID, that people are really creating that community and a network and purpose. And today on Giving Tuesday, it gives those with the ability to give the opportunity to be a part of something bigger than ourselves, to join with missions of organizations and help them achieve their goals. I can tell you, as a small nonprofit, you know, every single dollar that comes to Planetara counts and makes a difference. We watch funds roll in donor by donor, and we're so grateful for each and every one and for that community that we build today and every day. And we're really hopeful that today we can encourage people who love to travel to think of those communities that you have visited in the past, where you ate a local meal or learned about weaving or traditional art or a language or history from a local community member. Those small interactions people have owned businesses. Most of the business has had no income for nearly 10 months now. And we're really hoping that you think today about how you can support these communities, how you can get involved with Giving Tuesday, and, you know, support travel coming back better when travel resumes in a more responsible way that ensures local people benefit every time we go abroad.
Thank you very much. Angela Frigo, your quick thoughts on the importance of Giving Tuesday 2020.
Yes, thank you very much, Ted. So I really agree with the other speakers, the previous speakers. And what I would like to add is that, well, as they said, I think that today we should say, first of all, thank you, because in this period, generosity has been evident. So many people have given, they have given food, funds, but time. So we have received a lot, and also a lot of new collaborations have been established. What I would like to add today is that we still need your help. We still need the help of everyone, and everyone can make the difference and can give a contribution and can support the daily activity of many, many charities that are helping people in need worldwide. So I think that today we have the possibility to share this strong message. So saying thank you, but also we still need your help well today and also in the coming months and years.
Well, well said, well said. And thank you very much again, Angela Frio. Carla Nobrega, please share with us your thoughts on Giving Tuesday 2020.
Hi, Ted. Yes, I agree with my colleagues. And also, I'd like to add that Brazil is a country that needs to improve its culture of donation, as strategic philanthropy is relatively new here. However, during the pandemic, we saw an amazing volume of donations coming from corporate and individuals. Solidarity is stronger than ever now, and not only here in Brazil. The Giving Tuesday is a day to celebrate donation and generosity. Now, more than ever, we are developing new fundraising strategies as personal contact must be avoided in these days. But I'm sure that supporters and volunteers are sensitive to the Giving Tuesday global movement today, and together we will overcome challenges to build stronger programs and help more people. Thank you so much for your support and contribution to a better world.
Thank you, Carla. And Carlos Leniak, please help us with your thoughts on today, Giving Tuesday 2020.
Sure. I'd hope that the listening audience feels that let's not let our inability to do everything prevent us from doing something. There are so many wonderful organizations in the world that need this critical level of support. Giving Tuesday is transformative. So many of our organizations doing incredible work. And frankly, it's easy to get caught up in the big moments and watching it all play out on television and throwing up our hands saying we can't solve it all, but we can do something. And those contributions add up. And it's contributions financial, but also in other ways too. And that's the power of the platform of Big Brothers Big Sisters. People can mentor and manifest their own time and intention in that way as well. So I'd hope that this year, as has been said, is the year of generosity, that we can end the year strong and make sure that that social sector organizations like so many that are on this call and many others are not only surviving but thriving into the next year.
Thank you, Carlos. And thank you to all of our partners and collaborators from around the world, specifically today coming to us from Hong Kong, Toronto, Brazil, Brussels, and Newark, New Jersey, celebrating today, Giving Tuesday 2020. We hope that all of you can take away from this podcast some of the really terrific stories of adaptation, of innovation. Certainly the word pivot has been alive and well on this podcast. And the bottom line for Giving Tuesday 2020 is please give, collaborate, and let's celebrate generosity around the world. Thank you for being our guest here today on the Caring and Funding Podcast.
You've been listening to the Caring and Funding Podcast, powered by CAP America. Tell all your friends and colleagues to check out our archives, sign up for our free newsletter, and download our iPad and iPod-friendly podcasts at capamerica.org. Thanks for listening to the Caring and Funding Podcast.